Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time to talk about the offense from that week two win over the Browns, a 41-17 win, which frankly didn't have as much offense as the score would indicate. But here to talk about with me is Jordan Coe. Jordan, how you doing?
Good, Ken. Nice to be with you this year.
Great to have you back on with Jordan. We've done a number of shows over the years. The Situation Room, is that still in a hiatus or
it's in hiatus for right now? We'll see. Yeah. Dave and I have talked about it. We miss it a little bit, but we also don't miss it. It's a lot of work.
Gotcha. I understand. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the game on Sunday. Obviously, a game that's really driven by the defense. The defense obviously set them up with some nice short fields. The offense had a about as bad a game as you can have when you score 41 points in terms of not moving the ball. They rushed for only 45 yards, the lowest total of the Lamar Jackson era. The Browns were setting up to stop the run, and the Ravens didn't have a lot of answers for it. They hit a few big plays during the game, but they also went 3 of 12 on third down and didn't sustain many drives.
Yeah, this was a game that the final score was not close at all, but if you kind of go back and reanalyze how you probably felt with it through the third quarter, you weren't feeling, or at least as the third quarter was getting started, you didn't probably feel great about it. We had the block kick, we had the touchdown return from Roquan, you know, all those kind of, you mentioned the defense played great, and they should. The Browns are a bad offense. They're a bad offense. And so this shouldn't have been a close game. I'm glad it wasn't a close game, but I mean, I think the big question is Lamar. Is Lamar healthy? Because it doesn't seem like he is, but something doesn't seem like it's quite there with Lamar. That being said, this is early season, and early in the season, I don't know what it is with Lamar. I'm not saying that he's not in game shape, and I'm not complaining about Lamar Jackson, because how can one complain about what is probably the best player in the NFL? But it just feels like it takes a little while to get the train going when the season starts. I don't know if that's the Ravens don't play their starters in the preseason anymore. I don't know if it's about the playbook or how much they decide that they want to roll out. I feel like the Ravens really shorten the playbook limit and are much more conservative about the packages and the diversity of what they're willing to bring in early in the season. And that was part of the problem in the Buffalo game. I think it was part of the problem in kind of what was limited from the offense here in the Cleveland game. I think they should have diversified much more quickly to the pass and kind of forced Cleveland to change their game plan, but they kind of stuck with what was working and it didn't bite them in the butt. So you can't be upset about it, but you know, at some point you got to open it up.
Probably some things I'm upset about still. Yeah, so I'm not going to be told I can't be upset about it. but I accept your opinion on that you're not upset about it. Unspectacular day for Lamar. You know, you mentioned something doesn't seem right. I don't feel like he's hurt. It just wasn't a great day for him. He threw a couple balls that were thrown into trouble, and he was lucky. Didn't end up as interceptions. A couple tip balls, one on the sideline, one in the end zone, another one at the line of scrimmage. That was tipped up and could have been a pick. So he got lucky to get away with no interceptions out of this game. They didn't turn the ball over. Henry gave him another chance to fumble as well, and Wallace fortunately pounced on it. Wallace had a great game. And the backup receivers came through with a really big game. I'm including DeAndre Hopkins in that group as the number three, but also Devontae Walker with a couple of scores and Tylan Wallace with a plethora of contributions, including that first TD.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is so aside from my generalization that you can't be upset because I'm still a little upset too. this offense is potent. I mean, there is just, it really is one of those things where they don't have to be terribly too complex and they're always going to have an answer to what the other team is doing. We saw that here. Walker is a good example of that. He's just an absolute burner in a way at the actual wide receiver position that the Ravens have not had in a long time. Probably, I mean, even from his, yeah, exactly. So, you know, there aren't answers. And if you want to try and take away the pass in those situations, the Ravens are going to be able to run the ball. We saw that against Buffalo when they weren't as effective up front as Cleveland was. Also, we didn't see Lamar trying to run the ball in this game. That's what the signal to me that something is not right with Lamar, and whether it's conditioning, whether it's like direct like injury health, whether it's something else. The zone read was barely to be found in this game. The threat of Lamar as a runner was barely to be found in this game. Just felt like they just weren't, again, they weren't trying to do it all. And it just makes you wonder why.
Well, I hear you on that. Of course, the zone read in terms of any handoff to Henry is a potential zone read, and they try and make it look that way. The zone read, the defense decides if you're going to stick that ball and leave it there in Henry's belly. It's not the offense that decides it. It's Lamar will make a read. If the edge defender is crashing, he'll keep the ball. If the edge defender is hanging out looking for a way to contain Lamar, then he'll typically hand that ball right off. What I thought the Ravens lacked in this game was a third legitimate misdirection option, and that's where Keaton Mitchell would have been very handy for this kind of game. And do not understand not having him active. Obviously, very frustrating that Ali gets hurt on the first play. I would guess that he will not see action this next week, that they'll hold him out at least 1 week, even though it's 8 days, and presumably there might be time for him to get right again if there was, in fact, a concussion. I never heard officially that it was. But he'll be on the injury report probably starting tomorrow, and I assume it's likely we'll see Keaton Mitchell this week. But Mitchell gives you that third option. He gives you the option to play pony, gives you the option to use a second running back as a flanker, not take away from any of your receiving weapons down the field, still have plenty of speed there. You know, aside from, you know, we saw a real nice corner route from Walker, which was really the first of his NFL career. He had a straight go against the Giants last year for his touchdown. And we have seen so far this year, Zay Flowers is uncoverable on any kind of a in-breaking crossing route. Well, I guess crossing route's always in-breaking, but any kind of a crossing route, the trailing corner has no chance against him, which means he has to get help, which completely changes the defense. And the last thing I want to see is gadgetry run that involves Zay Flowers and taking that away as another component of misdirection. So got to have Mitchell, got to have Hill maybe if he's the guy, but got to have a second option. Maybe LaJonte Wester also would be another guy.
Yeah, and we haven't, you know, Hill has not been, and it's early. It's early. Mm-hmm. We've been through 2 weeks. The Ravens not running a lot of snaps either, right? Mm-hmm. The Ravens have really, on offense, had, if you compare it to the amount their defense have played, had a game and a half or less of total offensive snaps. So they haven't put a lot on film. That's a good thing. Justice Hill saw more snaps in this game than he did last week, but we haven't seen a lot from him. I don't understand the Keaton Mitchell not playing thing. Like, you need your best players on the field. Also, though, special teams does matter more this year than it has in past years. You know,
but that could be a reason to have Mitchell as opposed to not having Ali. Now, I know Harbaugh is giving the answer that he wants Ali basically for his special teams, which basically is saying he wants him for coverage, in my opinion.
Correct. I agree. Yeah. But we got by just fine last week with Ali being hurt. So that is hopefully the answer there, and that the dynamic add of Mitchell, I mean, it's not even the dynamic add of Mitchell. It is put your best players on the field, right? Like, and put your best players in position to succeed. And it's great that Tylan Wallace had a tremendous game. I'm glad. I don't understand. I didn't look at the snap counts, or I did look at the snap counts, but I don't remember. And I wasn't coming in to try and make this point, but Tylan Wallace feels like he had to have had way more snaps than DeAndre Hopkins.
That, yeah, I believe that's true. But I'll check.
My intuition tells me that, and yeah. I don't understand that. Like again, like you know, I understand the Ravens want to run the ball. You don't have Legley. You don't have Ricard. it's just, you know, why put your best players on the field sometimes and don't get cute.
Yeah, I'm not sure that Wallace isn't their best player on the field as opposed to Hopkins. There are some situations where Hopkins is the best guy, but it is situational, I believe. Anyway, Wallace, 41 snaps, 28 offense, 13 special teams, and Hopkins just 10 offensive snaps to make those couple of plays, which is pretty great.
It's hard for me to buy the idea that Tylan Wallace's role in the offense is three times greater than DeAndre Hopkins. Even if I did that Hopkins was not the superior player to Wallace, I don't think it's a 3X factor.
Okay, I'm not sure it has to be there's lots of players.
28 to 10. No,
but there's lots of players only 20% better than their backup, but they get all the snaps. And the backup doesn't play at all. At offensive line, that's true. Lots of positions, that's true. I mean, I believe in the fresh legs on offense. I believe in bringing Hopkins in to get some snaps. But Wallace is the best run blocker the team has at wide receiver.
And they barely ran the ball this week.
They did. He had a great chip block on a reception he had recovered a fumble from Derrick Henry.
I'm not trying to bag on Tylan Wallace. That wasn't the objective here. It's just like I see the same thing with Wallace playing over Hopkins in some of these situations as I do with Keaton Mitchell not being on the active roster. It's just like it feels like there are tools in the belt here that for whatever reason we're choosing not to utilize. And like maybe once Ricard and Likely come back, we start to see Wallace's role reduced because they're figuring out ways to use him in that slot receiver role a little bit more like a tight end role, a little bit more cover for the fullback role. And so then I think that there's something to buy into the idea that there are more snaps to be had if you're running the ball more. But simultaneously, the Ravens were also committed to throwing the ball more in this game. It was clear that they weren't going to be running the ball effectively. They were throwing a lot. I just have a lot of questions about the Ravens offense from that perspective overall. And Keaton Mitchell is kind of part of that conversation.
I mean, the Keaton Mitchell conversation is worth it. Here's the big statistic for me for Keaton Mitchell goes back to week one against Buffalo. Okay. You make the selection of Ali over Mitchell, and you had him for the whole game. So it's not a question of, oh, he got hurt on the first play. That's the reason why he didn't play. In the first week, he was used for 7 kickoff return snaps and 1 snap of offense and 8 other special team snaps. So the 1 snap of offense, you can't convince me under any circumstances that's going to be anything close to what Mitchell would provide on offense, but either tactically or in actual fact, in terms of being on the field. And the 7 snaps of special teams play is such marginal value relative to the incremental value over Mitchell that he would have on those same snaps, or that you would have to force somebody else like Hill onto the field to cover some kicks, say, which he did his whole career before. I think last year was the year he stopped playing special teams, but he's perfectly capable. He's probably still one of the best gunners on the team right now. And he could cover kickoffs. No question about it. It's just a matter of who do you not want on the kickoff return unit. And it's 7 extra snaps out of Ali just doesn't make any, or 8 extra, I think it was. Yeah. Makes no sense at all to me relative to what Mitchell could have provided this team in terms of misdirection. And I think they missed it in week one and, not maybe as much as you would think, but I think he could have been one of the players who would have been around late in that game to maybe make a play. Most of the time, Mitchell does his damage early. He's a build up the lead player. He's not necessarily a put the game away guy. But if you want to talk about the best misdirection of weapon on the team, you just described it when you say the other team's antenna is up when he comes into the game. They all know he's getting the football, so we can't design a play for him. Great.
Exactly. Put him on the field and get it to someone else.
if only everybody thought I had aces every hand at poker, I'd have them. Anyway, just bothers the hell out of me explanation.
I think some of that is just noise, and I do think that Harbaugh kind of screws around, and the injury reports and all the, like, they love their, I don't even know what the word for it is. Yeah, like they're into that, and they're into like the misdirection during like press stuff and like not sharing information, and they think that there's like a quantifiable edge that they get from that, and maybe there is, maybe we're missing the boat here. Like maybe they're setting it up for Keaton when he does come in for there to be extra focus on him because he's saying this stuff now, and like I wouldn't put it past them for thinking that they're the smartest guy in the room to say that.
I mean, you don't, if it was truly true, you don't need to tell anyone. If it's not true, you can't make it so. So I'm not buying it either way. I mean, it's just, I already listened to what Harbaugh says with a shaker full of salt in terms of those interviews. I know, you know, his goal should be to misdirect in those. I'm good with that. I'm good being lied to when I'm asking him questions at the podium. I don't want him to tell us anything about injuries because we don't need to know. And as Ravens, you know, fans, we should want there to be no information forthcoming on injuries. We should never hear, by the way, with our Darius Washington injury, I have no idea what his status is, but nothing should ever be mentioned until he's ready to come off the injured list and start practicing. Any week now. Yep. We're still expecting him back. You know, you can say that kind of stuff, but don't say anything about it. If he had surgery, don't talk about it. You know, there's no reason anybody other than, you know, on any other team needs to know that, or any other reporter. Just stay quiet.
Do other teams actually watch the press conferences of all the 31 other teams in the league?
They might advance scout the press conferences just for some information there. I guess it's so easy to have an intern do that, and it's so little total tape. You know, I would say, sure. And it takes so little effort to really do it. I mean, you could even have a PR guy do it. You wouldn't need to have a football ops guy do it, but you probably have a football ops guy do it.
Interesting.
And you got a lot of guys. All right, let's keep going. Per play efficiency in this game. For two games, remains very high. It wasn't really high in this game particularly, but it's very high for two games. But if you look at the results, completely barbelled on offense. This is not a offense right now with the kind of the by-play results they've had. If you put them back into the jar and redrew from it, you're not going to get the kind of optimal scoring that you would expect, because you're going to have a lot of variation in result, which you generally value that accrues to the defense. They had a lot of negative run plays against Buffalo. They had a bunch of run plays that just didn't work in this game. They had incomplete passes in both games, so they've got a pretty good completion rate. And then you had only three long plays in this game. So it's not like they had a bunch of big heavy hitters in this game. They had eight against Buffalo. That was really good, but they only had three in the second week. So it's the offensive efficiency is just not what people think it is when they point to 81 points on what 103 offensive plays, or maybe even 100 offensive plays if you take out the three kneels at the end of this game.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and I know we'll talk about this, but it comes down to the wild inconsistency of the offensive line right now. It is just, it's really hard to watch at this particular moment. And Monken, they can do all the defending they want in the press conferences of their players, and they can tell me how great everybody is doing and all of that, but it's just, and they are sometimes like, and part of, you know, you talked about the eight explosive plays in the Buffalo game, and that comes, a lot of half of those were runs, right? Like maybe five of them were runs, right? And so you know, you got these big, when you take away the big, yeah, four, so half, but either way, you take four of those away from this game, that's the difference between three and seven, right? And so, and a lot of that, like some of this stuff could have been better from an offensive line perspective. Same in pass blocking. Some plays look great, and that's when they do well in a lot of those plays. They look great, and then some plays are just, I mean, you've got guys blocking air.
Yeah, the offense is really, really, really misses Patrick Ricard and Isaiah Likely. They are both possession players who help sustain drives. Ricard, obviously, with his blocking, Likely with both blocking and as a receiver. And, you know, Mark Andrews has gone MIA these 2 weeks. It's not like that's never happened in consecutive weeks before, but he really looks like something is not right from an injury perspective, but like his head really isn't in the game in the same way. To not secure the football would be the play I'd point to as the bat. I mean, that was Lee Evans all over again. What we just watched on that end zone, you know, punch out. Yeah. And he's got to find a way to secure that football. He's got to be more football aware. And Andrews is a guy who's typically turtled up in the end zone after the catch, you know, been very aware of snatch and to the belly kind of thing. And he took it too easy. He took the ball as secured and paid the price for it.
I mean, we really are seeing the rise of Zay Flowers being the primary for Lamar Jackson. I mean, it until this year. I mean, even last year, through a part of it, it still was Andrews. But we're starting to see an evolution where Lamar's moving away from that. That's not necessarily a bad thing when it comes down to it. I mean, we're also seeing Lamar trust Hopkins on some of these deep throws in isolation where he's still got a guy on him to a degree. Lamar really hates to throw the ball to guys that aren't open. He really doesn't like to do it, and it's part of why he doesn't turn the ball over. It's part of what makes the Ravens offense great. I am glad that he does that. Part of what allows him to do that is he can get away with more than a lot of other guys in the league can get away with. But he trusts Hopkins in a little bit more of a way that Flacco kind of started to trust Bolden when we were kind of in that era of this team. And if Flowers can be a primary, and then they can lean back, if teams start to evolve their coverage away from Andrews, and I have not watched enough of the film this year to know whether or not, I mean, Andrews has been so impressive about Andrews' career is he's done it in the way that Kelsey has done it with Mahomes, where not only was he the primary guy, he was the primary guy the defenses were still trying to key in on, and he was still getting it done. I don't know if that's still happening this year. It very well could be, which is why he's not, from a volume perspective, getting it done. If that volume shifts to Zay Flowers and we can see that ebb go back over to Andrews, or likely when he comes back, that's a good thing for the Ravens offense when it comes down to crunch time and when they are going to have to reach into the bag down the stretch of the season.
Yeah. I think Andrews will get better opportunities as time goes on. But he's 4 targets for 7 yards right now. The 4 targets is not at his normal level, but the 7 yards for 4 targets is obviously at the Deontay Johnson level of production. It's not acceptable. So there are a lot of things to be frustrated about in this office. There's a lot of things to be happy. Wallace is playing good football. I don't have a problem with that. I think, you know, Henry has had barbell results, but his results have been good enough on a yards per carry basis that they overcome basically exactly right now. I think the fumble he had in Buffalo, And you know, it's very fortunate the fumble got recovered in this game as well, because it could have made a difference in terms of maybe not the outcome, but definitely the amount of perspiration involved in that game from the fans. Okay, some other things that are not perfect about it. Well, I guess we'll talk about the Browns a little bit defensively, because first of all, the Browns are very good this year. They've got a front six that is absolutely outstanding, and just watching the offensive line struggle with these massive beasts. Graham is outstanding. Malik Collins is outstanding. We obviously know Myles Garrett's outstanding. He gave Ronnie Stanley a reminder of that in this game. And then Isaiah McGuire on the other side is pretty damn good. They've got a lot. And Shelby is good as well. He's like an improved version of Broderick Washington, maybe, if you want to talk about it here, a guy who has some ability to get up as a defensive tackle and, you know, make a play on the ball. They have a lot of talent in the front six / front seven. They run a 4-3. So I'm really calling it the front six, but you know, they're two inside linebackers, both good. Devin Bush has found a new home, and he's actually playing well for the first time in his career there. You know, playing up to his draft status anyway, and Schwesinger has looked very good through 2 weeks. So it's a very tough team to run on. They pack the box. You better not run. You better actually go after plays in the way you did. And one of the things that I was a little frustrated about was, despite the fact that they're packing and they had 8 a lot, but they had 9 on some plays where everybody was close to the line of scrimmage and. You have to just decide you're going to pass in those situations. And Lamar needs to make that decision at the line of scrimmage. I didn't feel like they beat the Browns badly enough on those plays in this game. That would have been my major frustration, is they didn't throw over the defense enough to make players like Delpit pay for being in the box.
And some of that is like personnel decisions. Some of that is how they line up. It drives me. If the Ravens know that these teams are going to crowd the box and do that, and likely not being there makes this a little bit more difficult, but stop putting everybody inside the freaking numbers on that side of the ball, having two tight ends, having two guys in the backfield and one guy to the right, and then you're going to try and throw the ball. Well, yeah, I mean, it's going to make it a lot more difficult to do that. If they're going to pack the box, get a snap where you can get Hopkins and Walker onto the field together, and then go no huddle and do not let those guys switch, right? Like, there are there are things and ways to attack that. And the Ravens, and you know, look, I think that Mitchell Payton, other than the false start, right, has been fine relatively in terms of what they've asked him to do. But like, this is a guy that was on the practice squad, right? Like, he could literally be on any team in the NFL right now. And you're asking him to be a major part of like those packages as well. Like, that is just, again, just not putting your best players on the field. And if that means that you've got to run some more 11 personnel and three wide receiver sets and start from that as a baseline to spread these guys out and get them out of those formations and give your offensive line a chance, right? If these guys have guys on both sides of them in every single gap on every single play. Like, right. I can also understand how that makes it hard to be successful in what you're trying to do. I just,
the Ravens get stubborn. The Ravens had another problem in this game, and that is that they couldn't block 5-on-5, and then they had to start blocking with a lot of eligible receivers. But the Browns, when they rushed 5 or 6 in this game, Jackson was under 4 yards per pass. I have that. I'll be getting to that later. But they looked terrible when they rushed. When they rushed 6, they only did that 4 times, but 0 yards on those 4 plays. So
that being said, Cleveland looked very good against Cincinnati last week. Cincinnati's offense, even with their backup quarterback after their starter came out, looked very good after that. Yeah. And so I think there's a lot of credit does need to be given to Cleveland. I think they're going to be a good defense this year. And I think everybody just kind of assumed, oh, they're going to be back because they're the Browns. And there's nothing wrong with making that assumption.
You know, it's really important for Ravens fans that the Browns play well this year. Now, obviously, the Ravens got one game against the Browns in the rearview mirror. But if the Browns were to finish 8-9, their young boys' quarterback dreams are all but over in terms of really getting a top guy. They have an extra pick in the top 10, but if they end up drafting 13th and have an extra number 10 pick, that's still not enough to move up to the number 1 pick overall without surrendering yet another first-round pick from a future year. That's a big thing for the Ravens to shoot for is – If they don't play the Browns in week 18, unfortunately, they play Pittsburgh, who will probably be playing for a playoff spot. If they're playing the Browns, that'd be a great game to sacrifice to the draft capital pool for next year. It'd be a big one. And obviously, it's one of the big things that it worries me. It doesn't keep me up at nights, but it worries me when I'm awake during the day that the Browns are going to supplement the fantastic draft they had this year with actual talent next year again on offense. But they got a bunch of good defensive players this year.
Don't worry. The Browns offense is trash. And they're not going to be able to win. I mean, they're not going to be able to win many games because of that. I mean, it shouldn't have been 17. It should have been 10 in this game. Marlon Humphrey, like, I don't know. Like, hopefully the Ravens are getting all this bad tip luck at the goal line out of their systems now.
Yeah, because that's how it works.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just like in roulette and blackjack.
Yes, right. Yeah, you want to have that martingale system. You're always doubling your bet. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that with this team right now, that's for sure.
But like, hopefully some of that luck will regress over the latter portion of the season. But this really should have been, it really should have been a 10-point game. The offense is not very good. The Ravens defense played very well, but not like the Browns defense was very good in this game because they were really dominant up front. The Ravens defense just played better because like they have better players overall than the Browns had. I don't think they did anything particular. I wasn't terribly impressed with anything in its uniqueness.
Yeah. I mean, the Browns are playing with a very limited quarterback in terms of the Ravens didn't have to make a lot of sacrifices to get pressure on him. They could rush 4, do it effectively. We talked about that on the defense show. I'm not going to go over that again, but please go back to listen to part 2 of the defense show if you want to hear a lot of the detail, or go out and on to filmstudybaltimore.com and read the article about it. But it's basically a bunch of blitzes and simulated pressures, which drove a lot of the really positive results from the 4-man pass rush. It was very effective. And, you know, I think they gave up 3.9 yards per play on the 4-man rush, which is that's exceptionally good. The greatest teams of all time, you talk about the 70s Cowboys, the 70s Vikings, the 60s Rams. You know, they had a 4-man pass rush, and most of this is pre-free agency because you couldn't maintain it today. They had a 4-man pass rush that they had a special name, the Fearsome Foursome or the Purple People Eaters or the what are the Cowboys called? The Doomsday Defense, right? But they didn't have one for the line.
That's before my time, Ken.
All right. Sorry about that, young man. All right. But anyway, a group of you can rush the passer with four consistently and get pressure. There's almost nothing you can do defensively that's more effective than that.
Yeah, Green Bay is going to have that recognition by the end of this year. They are that good up front when they're rushing four.
I'm fearful of it, and it'd be one of the really interesting Super Bowl matchups to see if Lamar Jackson against can neutralize a front four. He's neutralized all kinds of great pass rushers in recent over the last 2 years and change. But Myles Garrett got after him in this game for sure, and they got him for three times total, and they were all big sacks. They weren't the "I'm choosing to run and it might be for minus one or zero" kind of sacks. These were, minus nine, minus 10, I think, on the three sacks. So ugly.
And I think some of that goes back to personnel, like not having Ricard and Likely play into all of this, Likely being the extra receiver. It makes it a lot easier to cover the Ravens in these heavy packages. And they were still staying a little bit heavier, I think, probably to try and slow down that pass rush to some degree, but it's taking guys that can get open and giving Lamar options off the table. Two of those sacks felt like cover sacks that Lamar just in normal circumstances would have gotten the ball out, and there was nowhere to get it out combined with a good pass rush. So,
yeah. He had one in particular where he moved up in the pocket that I kind of thought that was true, that there was potentially a throw to be had there, but it didn't come out. It's a little more of the background information here. I think it's important people look at this game and realize that this isn't just a gimme game against the Browns. It really wasn't. It was a very well-coached game. It was a well-coached game from both coordinators, I felt like, less so from Monken than from Warr, but still well-coached from Monken, dealing with a set of circumstances, not wanting to show more than a card or two out of his old deck. It was good from that perspective. They only used three packages the whole day on defense, and one of it was one snap of jumbo, five snaps of dime, all of which were defensive wins, four outs, and a fifth one that was a third and seven turned into a third and three. So it's barely a defensive win on that one as well. 66 times they played a standard nickel, basically thumbed their nose at the Browns and said, "You can't run against us, and we're going to keep showing you until you can." And they ran a little bit, but it was not nearly successful enough to make up for their other shortcomings.
And that's what I mean, the Ravens being the inverse, right? I know we're not on the defense, but like theoretically by the end of the season, once Starks, I do think they've been more conservative on their defensive play calling. I think that was part of the problem in the Buffalo game. I likened this when I talked to Gabe about it as the same issue the Ravens had early with Hamilton, which is that they're just not unveiling, they're not putting everything on him yet. And so there's just like not as much complexity. But the Ravens are so good in their back six, their back five, there's a back six, whatever you want to call it, right? Outside of their rush, that they should be able to do the inverse of what we're getting with some of that as that complexity continues to grow and grow. And they should be able to do it in nickel. I mean, the Ravens should be able to play a lot of nickel this year.
Yeah, they've got a big advantage this year. With Buchanan in there, he can take coverage responsibilities and allow Roquan a multitude of different options. So that was one of the big things we talked about also on the defensive show. Again, listen to that podcast if you have a chance. The other components of the coaching that were good, Harbaugh had multiple things in this game that he had to be worried about, but he faced it the 26th time the Ravens have been favored by 11-plus during his tenure, and they're 26.
You ever have one of those days where everything's off? Well, Mood can help with that. And let me tell you about Mood. It's the online cannabis brand that is changing the way we handle everything, from stress to sleepless nights, with functional gummies that are 100% federally legal cannabis. Mood launched to make cannabis affordable, accessible, and transparent, while at the same time supporting American farmers growing premium hemp on small, pesticide-free farms. Their gummies are next level. Seriously, I've tried a few, and each one feels totally different. The Sleepy Time gummies, out like a light, immediately asleep. The Epic Euphoria, it's perfect when you just need a reset to feel good again. What makes them unique? Mood combines THC with herbs and adaptogens, so you get real targeted effects. You're not going to find this in your typical dispensary. And here's the best part. Mood ships discreetly to most states, offers a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, and right now you get 20% off your first order with the promo code RAVEN. Just head to mood.com. Find your perfect gummy and use the code RAVENS at checkout to save 20%.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
6-0 in those games. That is not an easy record to obtain. It's just not. These were a bunch of easy teams to beat. You're a gambler, and as an 11-point underdog, the Ravens had about one chance in seven to lose this game. But let's say it's a little bit higher than that, since the average point spread was higher. Let's say it's 88% to win each of those games. The chance of winning 26 games in a row, and you have an 88% chance independently of each one to win each one, is only 4%. That didn't happen randomly. It happened because they know how to get ready for an opponent they're a lot better than. And people will remember the crappy games. They'll remember the 10.5-point spread that they lost on in Jacksonville, or they'll remember the 9-point game they lost to the Raiders, or they'll remember some other 9-point game. I'm here to tell you, other Hall of Fame coaches have lost a lot more games in these situations. Don Shula lost 9 such games. He's like 72-9. Tom Landry lost games in this situation. All the great ones. Why is his name escaping? Andy Reid has lost a bunch of games in these situations. So Mike Tomlin has lost games in these situations. So Harbaugh is actually special in this particular way. And the people who are on Harbaugh's back need to realize that for this. And I think that, the loss at Buffalo was really unfortunate. And it was really unfortunate because of the way it rolled out, though, more than the fact that they lost a game that they had about a 53% chance to win at the start.
Yeah, true. Right. Like if you ignore the arc of like where it ultimately went, but like also it was just a Murphy's Law game. Right. And like, it's very like, I was really upset after the game, and I still would not be upset if the Ravens at the end of the season, if they don't win a Super Bowl and there's a coach that they really like, decided to make a change and brought in whoever that coach was. But I feel less strongly about that today than I did at the end of the Buffalo game. And you can do a lot worse than John Harbaugh. And I know that that's real defeatist-ish borderline mentality. But most of the coaches that come into this league that should be good aren't. It's kind of like quarterbacks. There's no way that anybody would have said when the Ravens hired John Harbaugh that he would be as good as he has been over these last 19 years. You couldn't have predicted that. And if anybody did, then they should tell me the Powerball numbers for the next drawing, right?
Well, I'll tell you, he was the Ravens' second choice. They wanted Garrett, and they didn't get him.
And he was trash.
And he was not nearly as good as Harbaugh, that's for sure. So is he still an assistant coach somewhere in the NFL?
No, he's on Monday Night Football or something.
You're right. Yeah. Okay.
So he's relegated to hanging out with Chris Collinsworth's son. That's how far he's fallen.
All right. We talked about, I think, everything else I want to talk about there. A few other general comments. I did mention the thing. They lost the snap count by 19 this week. They lost it by 28 the week before. And it was a bad 28 because the 28 was all in the second half. It was 28-28 at the half. It was 50-22 in the second half. And the defense was just dog tired. It could not, draw a breath as the Bills were coming back. So it's not surprising they couldn't get it done. Oh, I did want to talk about one other Harbaugh thing. I forgot. The 4th-and-1 play. Okay, let's talk about that in terms of what that meant. Because I'll tell you, from a mathematical perspective, pure mathematical perspective, and I need to qualify this all the way, there's no doubt about it, you go for it from your own 13-yard line. In fact, you go for it from anywhere on the field with 4th-and-1. Anywhere on the field. It would not matter where. The reason I would say you don't do it in this instance is that it's literally about the only way you lose a game to the Cleveland Browns is by going for it, giving them a short field and letting them score. But the other choice, which was punting, did also give them a short field, and they did score a field goal, not a touchdown. But there was risk associated with both avenues is the key point. There is no safe option.
You got it wrong because the Ravens, what the heck was that sequence? What was that? Like if you go and like outstanding of like the results and the outcomes and the odds of what they should and shouldn't have done, what the heck happened there? Right? Like, first of all, you should already know Like, and this is, Gabe and I talk about this a lot. I think that most of what happens on game day should be prepared for. Like, when things go wrong, it's because they weren't preparing for it during the week. One of the things that you need to be talking about during the week is these kind of situations where when we are deep in our own territory, but it's fourth and one, this week we're going to go for it with this package, right? And you have got to be ready on the field. The players that are watching need to come into that situation need to be ready for it. And you have a package and you're ready to go. And that is fine if you get them on the field immediately. But they didn't. And then they came back out and then they lined up and then they didn't do it. Like, just outstanding of like, should or shouldn't you do it? What the heck? Like, it was just really bad process.
If you're asking me what the heck were they thinking, I think I can tell you that they all summer, they practiced running with a difficult cadence, a cadence that would challenge the offense. And they would do these set and snap drills every single day where they go up helmetless to the line of scrimmage. They get to the line of scrimmage. They try and get their play off, get out of their stance quickly, do all the things they need to do. It's been reported all summer, by the way. I've been talking about it the whole time when I talk about like what drills are they doing day after day. And they thought they had a chance to draw the other team off sides. I think the chance is less when you have Andrews at the line of scrimmage. I think the chance is better when you have Jackson at the line of scrimmage. But Jackson's never really been a good hard count quarterback in his entire career.
That's the one the one thing that Lamar has never been good at is the QB sneak.
Well, it's and he shouldn't be, honestly. You don't want to really use him in that way. They don't want to use Mahomes in that way, and I understand completely. And it's fine that they use Jalen Hurts and Allen that way, and I hope that one day they pay the price for it. You know, it's just that's the way it ought to be. You shouldn't get away with that many tush pushes without some consequences is the truth of the matter. But in the case of Andrews, they could have gone for it there. I think that it probably would have been a gain of, 3 to 4% in terms of win probability in the game. Probably not even that much because they were already a pretty high probability of winning the game. So their difference is not going to be that great, but they weren't betting the whole game, not by any stretch of the imagination. But they could have played for a marginal, let's call it 1 to 2% chance to win the game by holding the ball, running out the half, possibly scoring again themselves, and then getting the ball first in the second half again. The game was in doubt at that point, a 10-0, right? 10-0 when they decided that, and then it came back and they scored their first field goal to make it 10-3. It wouldn't have been the worst thing if they'd gone for it. I just wouldn't have felt like it's the right thing. Here's the mathematical thing is there's two ways to look at this problem. One way is like it's a straight exchange of win probability, which I'm okay with looking at that way. And certainly when it's the last decision you make in a game, I think it's certainly the right way to do it. But there's another one that you work with that has to do with gamblers managing a bankroll, which is called risk of ruin analysis. And that deals with this problem very differently. It says you have a chance with a given play and you don't know of bankrupting yourself on the play in terms of the win. And I think maybe not on this play, but on some plays, I think that's potentially true where you can lose the game on the play, but you can't win it. And you really don't want to take that chance. And I think this was a game where the right call was to not do that. And then they didn't call timeout, which was a little strange to me, which gave them five yards.
No. Again, like I said, that's where I hear what you're saying, and I've heard those reports about what they were trying to do and all of that. Fine. But like, again, do that in cadence, do that quickly, make the defense feel the pressure and the rush of that. You gave them a timeout. You keep like you let them see the package when you were coming out. They came out heavy. Like there was just like, I mean, when they came out super, super heavy, the Ravens might as well just have called timeout and just punted the ball. Like it was clear. Immediately, one, I didn't think the Ravens were going to convert that, and two, that they weren't going to actually go for it, right? And it just didn't feel like that was ever the case. Like ESPN had the probability on that before that play happened at 85.3%. So again, it's very unlikely that it would have been a 4% swing, in terms of win probability. It moved from after that play, it moved to from 14.1 to 14.7.
Oh, that was after they punted, though.
Yeah.
That was after the delay of game.
The play that they took the penalty on, they were at 14.7, and then the next play, it was up to. Oh, geez, this meter is really
Okay. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. So there
14.6. It actually went down by 0.1% because they punted, right? But like, so I'm just saying that it wouldn't have swung to 18 or 10 or like, I don't think there would have been a 4%
variance. Because those aren't the two outcomes you're looking at. The two outcomes you're looking at is Cleveland has the ball at the 15 yard line or whatever it is, or 13, or the Ravens have the ball at the 15 with a first down. So those outcomes have different win probabilities. Yeah. That's the currency in play. So it's kind of like saying if you have a $300 bet out there on the blackjack table, it's a bad example. 300 bet on the pass line at craps, because that can only pay off at even money, right? So it's really a $600 bet because it's worth 600 or zero when it's resolved.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. All right. Let's keep moving on. I know how to play craps. That's always been a lot of fun when we get together. what else I want to say about this? They only scored 3 or 4 times in the red zone, a lot better than Buffalo, where they had, I forget if it was 1 of 3 or what it might've been, but Buffalo was 5 of 7. They went 1 of 2 in the goal to goal situations, that getting backed up from the half yard line after the Walker catch. That was one of the big offensive smack my heads of the game. All right. They're 3.52 points per drive through two games. Fantastic. It's basically all from the Buffalo game. This last game, they were just slightly under 3 per drive. But I think that there's the potential from the variance that I would see that they've had so far, there's the potential to reduce those results. I am hoping that the defense will set them up with some more short fields and that the return of some players is going to improve the offense. But right now, it seems like the ultimate first world problem is we're complaining about the efficiency of an offense that scored 81 points in two games.
Yeah. Well, technically the offense only scored 74.
You're right.
74 of those.
Yeah.
But still first world problems.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about Lamar. I want to get into the pass rush against him a little bit. They rushed 420 times. He had 7.5 yards per play on those, and they still got 2 sacks out of 20 plays. So 10% sack rate, small denominator, but a 10% sack rate on a 4-man rush. That's certainly, you'll take that any day of the week. They had 8 plays with a 5-man rush for 47 yards, 4 plays with a 6-man rush for 0 yards. So they only had 12 for 48, 3.9 yards per play with a sack when they rushed 5+. And I'm afraid that we may be, Lamar is going to have to prove again this year that he can deal with run blitzes / pass blitzes in his face at the line of scrimmage and knows how to deal. Nielsen knows that he's going to need to know how to deal with cover 0. You know, Zay Flowers is going to have a whole package of plays that Lamar can check into when he sees that look. We can't have another situation like having at Miami in 21.
Well, and you hope that the addition of a guy like Hopkins allows you to do that too. And that Flowers and Hopkins in those game plans in a cover 0 press are two of the guys that are out there. Same with Walker, right? He's such a burner. He's so fast that if he can beat press, that it is going to, like, teams will get burned on that, or he can just break that off for that quick under slant or whatever it needs to be.
Well, honestly, you don't even really need to break the route off. The standard Walsh hit him at 41 to 42 yards down the field on a go route. That takes less than 2 seconds to get out of the quarterback's hand. And there's really nothing the defense can do to prevent it. They have to stay with that receiver. So if you don't have a man back, you operate at your own.
I just meant if they were off instead of press because they wanted to respect Walker, he reads that 4 yards into the route, breaks it into his slant.
Gotcha. No, you're right. You're right. And then Flowers is an outstanding weapon for that, obviously.
Same guy. I mean, they can both do that. Hopkins can win on back shoulder. I mean, they have the formula for it. And at some point, they'll probably get tested there again. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, we'll talk about this with the offensive line, but you get more consistency from the offensive line and the Ravens should still be able to run against heavy fronts. And it's not like one of those things where the Ravens should always throw the ball if they're always seeing a heavy front. They have been good running against heavy fronts before. We've seen that. And Ricard helps with that a lot.
Yeah. I do think that the Browns knew exactly what they were doing defensively. And they said, our chance to win this game is to challenge Lamar to beat us through the air. And he kind of did. I mean, it's a great game. It was a great game statistically for Lamar with 4 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. From an actual like throw by throw perspective, I didn't think it was all that impressive. He's 10 yards above expectation for his opportunity set. He had three balls that he put in peril during the game in terms of it being intercepted. So there were problems. And then again, I mean, he threw a touchdown pass to Anders couldn't hold on to it. That was bad. And
I also thought Lamar and Rashad were just not on the same page this game. Like there were two or three different throws where it felt like they were not going to the same places, and Lamar seemed frustrated about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd agree with that. Want to talk about ample time and space, BOQ and pressure real quick. 11 ample time and space opportunities. And this is despite a really horrible offensive line performance. They still got him ample time and space on 34% of throws, which is pretty decent. And he's 9 of 11 on those for 102 net yards, 9.3 yards per play. The ball was out quickly 8 times. That's only 25%. That number is kind of low. And you definitely don't want to have the kind of relationship between pressure and ATS, namely more pressure than ATS in a game. But he had 25% BOQ, which was 6 of 8 for 50, 6.3. That's right about expectation. 6.0 is my expectation. 8.5 is the expectation I use for ample time and space. He had 9.3. But here's where it got bad. Against pressure, they had pressure 13 times. He completed 4 of 10 for 45 net yards, which is okay. 3.5 is right on target for the pressure expectation. Of course, Lamar Jackson's an above average quarterback, so I would expect him to hopefully beat his expectation more times than not. But he also took 3 sacks on that, which meant there was a high variance. And again, that the value of that variance accrues to the defense, that really in today's NFL is what needs to gamble.
Yeah, it also felt like some of those pressures were coming from, and because the Browns have a good defensive line, even when they were rushing extra guys, it was still those defensive line guys creating those pressures. Yeah. I think those are in some ways tougher pressures, right? Because like sometimes you get those pressures off the blitzer, the guy coming off the edge, you have more time to get away from that. You have more time to make a little bit more time to make a decision. Obviously, Myles Garrett is terrifying and I would not want to be sacked by him. And I think that just kind of speeds everything up and adds to kind of where the Browns can be really successful on some of that stuff.
Right. The interior pressure was awful in this game. The Ravens got it too on their end, but the interior pressure was relentless here. Malik Collins was fantastic in this game. Graham, he only got one pressure, but he was constantly too much for the Ravens offensive line, particularly in the run game. Shelby was in the backfield. I'm missing
and guys were getting moved. Guys were getting moved around. You know, this is the, you know, pressures, you know, look, pressure is a great stat. Sacks are a great stat. They tell you and are valuable in like their own unique ways, but the Ravens guys were just like not in the right places, so to speak, often. And whether that was generating direct pressure or not, I think that like the added weight of a quarterback being worried about his guys not being able to do what they're supposed to be doing, it also accelerates some things as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. Let's see, what else did I want to say about this? He's 0.3 yards per play above his expectation. Last week, that number against Buffalo was 4.0 yards per play better than expectation. Next Gen Stats had him at 2.83 time to throw, 14th in the league. That's not where Lamar Jackson is supposed to be. He's supposed to be in the top five. If he has his normal one or two really extended plays, and he had one kind of extended this play this time where he threw the ball down to Hopkins after a fair significant run around the backfield, but didn't really have a lot in terms of running around in this game for, you know, 6, 7, 8 seconds. He had a 5.5 second play maybe. He'll 1 9 second play in 30 snaps will increase you by, what, 2/10 of a second off your average.
Well, we did see there was one sack that Lamar took on the left side of the line where it felt like and this is why it just like feels like Lamar was not 100%, or they're just like, I don't know what it was, but it felt like he could have gone and he clearly chose not to. And he chose to take the sack in that circumstance. It was the one where Falele blocks nobody, essentially. Like, I forget who the defensive tackle was, but he just pushed Falele out of the way and he's kind of standing in front of him. So the pressure is collapsing from the right side. And it felt like Lamar could have squeezed out if he did his normal thing to the left, and he just didn't do that normal thing. And he ended up backing up right, I think, into Garrett. And so, you know, it's just, again, in the same kind of circumstance, you take two of those plays and all of a sudden, if you take that as a 10-yard loss and you turn it into a, you know, 9, 10, 20-yard gain from Lamar running, if that's an opportunity that's on the table there, that also swings your averages.
You're you're projecting an injury here, which I'm not seeing evidence of. I will take another look at all three of those sacks and see if there's one that kind of matches the description you're giving me. But that wasn't, I mean, what I'm noticing.
I'm not saying that he's injured. Yeah. I'm just saying that, like, I think the game plan was very clearly not to have Lamar run the ball in this game, no matter what, which he didn't.
but it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Except
from someone
it's not
on the
really. Because Lamar always runs the ball, right? I would question to go back. Did Lamar? I don't think Lamar had a single quarterback had a single run call to him in this game. Not one. It was only a scramble.
But he had read option plays where he let the ball go because he thought that was the better option if the defensive end is.
But there was still no design quarterback run calls at any point. Like in the Ravens.
I agree. They didn't boot away from him. They did have one of those. Actually, they did have the zone block to the left and naked booted him right. But they didn't do a lot of that. I agree.
It felt wound back and it felt like they were protecting him. That was my vibe. It just early in the game, some of those overthrows that Lamar had to like Flowers just like didn't feel like they were like quite on point for him. And he was slinging the ball so accurately and so well in the Buffalo game. And then to do that here at home, like in those instances, it just felt like something was off. And it could also be that Lamar was sick. Like Lamar loves to get sick early in the season too. And he was talking about the IV. He had the bandage on his hand. Like maybe he just wasn't feeling well. So like not an injury, but I don't know. It just felt like, I don't know. It just didn't feel like usual Ravens offense to me.
They did, you know, okay. Well, anyway, intended air yards, completed air yards were both third in the National Football League. That's exactly what we want from Lamar. We want him to be throwing the ball further, pressing that ball down the field, making teams that tighten up against him do it. I mean, from that perspective, at least was a challenging set of throws he was trying to make with this reasonably good opportunity set overall. Not great, but reasonably good overall. All right. What else we need to talk about? 1.68 heavies per play. It's amazing the Ravens can continue to do this without most of their the guys who constitute the heavies, specifically Likely and Ricard, taking snaps. But they got a couple of snaps out of Cleveland, and they got about 18 or something out of ZMP including just an awful penalty in the backfield for the false start. All right. The tight end production problem. We got zero targets for Kolar through two games, one for ZMP. That was in the end zone. It's the equivalent of a back shoulder. Lamar saw the back of the jersey of the defender. He said, okay, I'll take a chance on making this throw, but ZMP couldn't correct and get to that ball. I think that's a ball Likely corrects to. I think that's a ball that Hopkins corrects to, but ZMP could not find his way to get free of the defender in that particular case.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I've found it to be interesting how much I thought we were going to see a lot more 11. Through these first 2 weeks, if you told me that Ricard and Likely were out, I thought we would just see a lot more 11.
There's almost no other choice.
and the Ravens are like, screw that. We got this guy on the practice squad. He's great. He's coming out here, 18 snaps. You know, we talk a little bit about Harbaugh. I try and place a lot of the blame about play calls and preparation and decisions on those schematic things on the offensive and defensive coordinators during games. I think Harbaugh is very hands off about that. And I think those things happen during the week in terms of preparation. But I do think that there is somebody pushing the scale down a little bit saying, hey, we have to be like more run heavy. We have to be doing it this way. It just really stretches my imagination a bit to think that Monken wouldn't want to lean a little into 11 more than we have early in the year.
So interesting dichotomy here, because on the defensive side of the ball, they said, look, we're not going to rush a lot of numbers. We're going to play mostly nickel. We don't want to show our play. So they put a bunch of constraints on the defense. The defense did fine with it. They did absolutely fine with it. They schemed around what they needed to do and were terrific. On the offensive side of the ball, they put a bunch of constraints on the offense, and the offense was not fine with it, even though they scored 41 points, you know, because the 41 points, the way they scored, it's just not acceptable to these two guys sitting here on this podcast talking about it now. Of course, we're very happy. We're going to look at this 20 years from now. We're going to remember that's the damn 41-17 game that they won, despite the fact they should have won about 24-10 kind of thing. But anyway, the fact of the matter is they put all kinds of constraints on the offense, starting with not having Keaton Mitchell active. And and then, you know, bringing up ZMP and I don't really have a problem. He blocked pretty well in this game, Brock Bulan in the first game. Not a real problem with his play, honestly, but he had that really bad penalty where he was not as much a part of the cadence drills in camp just because he gets less snaps than other players do.
And I also can't believe it's the same thing, the analysis that I kind of gave earlier about my perception that I think that the Ravens are limiting what they're doing on defense because Starks is still learning the complexity of those packages, the switches, like the calls, how they communicate that to each other. Some of that stuff can only happen after he gets live game snaps. There are only a certain number of blocking schemes that you can hand to a fullback that is actually a tight end that is actually on your practice squad.
with a
limited amount of time.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, they do have an install during the week where ZMP knows he's playing and he knows that what his role is going to be in that game. And they install that package of plays. That's the part of practice that no media can go to. And it's done during the walkthrough phase, even before preseason games, that they learn the dance steps to these plays that they're going to run. He's not an experienced guy. That's for sure.
Right. I just think it makes the coordinator a little less likely to call some of those situations. It's kind of like a domino effect of like how it plays a part and how that ends up being fed out. And so just have him on the field less is my answer to that. And put a guy like DeAndre Hopkins on the field, who is your veteran and you're raving about and you're talking about how, like, and he's looked great, right? Like,
he's, you know, the results for Hopkins have been great. He's taken the ball away on he's had four catches now. One of them was that little catch short of the sticks. The other three have all been long plays where he, basically was contested, could not get separation, and yet still managed to catch the football. I'm happy that he caught those balls. I'm not as thrilled about the contested plays as you seem to be about it. I think you're ascribing.
It could be DeVontaze Walker. It could be Tylan Wallace, even though I disparaged him earlier. Like, I those guys are active roster guys that have signed second contracts in this league. And ZMP is a practice squad tight end that's not even a fullback. Like.
Okay, fair enough. I'm very interested in seeing what other ways they can find to create more misdirection than they had. That was the big missing element to me was misdirection from this offense. They just didn't put their damn best players on the field. That to me wasn't the issue. It was the lack of misdirection. You could have achieved it with those same players with one different player on the field, but still the heavy. You can still stick with the 1.68 per play, and you just LaJonte Wester is at flanker instead, and you're trying to do different things and show them different looks. If the other team knows that Keaton Mitchell is going to get the ball, they a hell of a lot more know that Zay Flowers is going to get the ball at this point. And having Zay Flowers go in jet motion, it gives away a lot about the play. I don't like what it does in terms of making it easier. I mean, the first thing, if I'm a safety seeing Zay Flowers go in motion, my first thing is, phew, I don't have to worry about him. You know, or I might have to tackle him. I might have to get to the spot, but he's not going to embarrass me by getting behind me and doing something.
The one call in the Buffalo game on offense that I really didn't like was the 2nd and 10 end around to Zay Flowers. That was not a great call. And it's so funny because I don't know if you were watching the Chargers Raiders game last night, but they were it wasn't the same situation because they needed to pick up a first, but they ran that. And I was like, this is just like a hardball thing. They just think they're smarter than everybody and they like to do it. And
at least give it to the right guy. You were giving it to Monken, give it to Greg Roman in this case, because he's the guy, and he is a fine Ravens fan whipping boy anyway for you know, bringing all the success to the early Lamar years that he did.
Well, anyway, like, I mean, Roman has looked great this year, and you assume that Jim Harbaugh's influence is part of like that evolution, and like he keeps him in check a little bit more about that stuff. So, but yes, Greg Roman, death upon all his houses, yada yada yada.
You are much more. You are definitely the angry mob personality. Somebody says, hey, there's a vampire. I think I saw him living down the street here. You're like, oh, wait a minute. Let me get my pitchfork and my torch, and let's go over there. and it doesn't matter if you're the first door he knocked on. He knows you're going with it. So, okay. Let's move on a little bit here. Last thing I want to say in the scheme stuff was that they had 11 set and 22 chip blocks. They used over one eligible receiver per play to block. That's very rare that ever happens. It's something that the 2008 Ravens did for Flacco with a lot of max protect and things like that. But the Lamar era Ravens, they never go over one. It's happened. I think it happened one time last year. But 1.03 is very high. And it really restricts what those chip blockers could do. The set blockers obviously aren't going out at all, but the chip blockers also very restricted in terms of what route that they can run.
I would just put this as a data point in my argument that the Ravens were being more protective of Lamar than they usually are in this game.
All right. And I'd put it as a data point in the Cleveland put it all at the line of scrimmage in terms of showing them what they had. And they used some extra protection because of that. Not to mention the fact that their outside guys can actually rush the passer, and those were good guys to chip with. But anyway. All right. I'll tell you what. We'll come back. We'll talk about the offensive line performance in some great detail, and then we'll talk about a lot of the skill position players. Get to your mailbag questions. But, Jordan, thanks so much for coming on for part one here. Tell folks where they can reach you online maybe and have a discussion about football, though that might be harder now.
Yeah, people can find me on Discord. My Discord handle is Flash Jordan K without the A in Jordan. So Flash JORDNK. You can hit me up there. I've got some other friends that got some other Discord channels that talk some Raven stuff. So feel free to shoot me an invite.
All right. Are you on Alex's channel? I don't do that too often. Yeah. Okay. All right. That's great. Thanks for coming on anyway. I know you're not really on Twitter anymore, and that's kind of one thing that, but you know, he's an account there, but if you send him a message, he might not get it for quite a while because I know you're not on there.
That's right,
not on the regular. Other folks out there, thanks for listening. For starters, I'm going to ask for a couple of special things. First of all, as always, like and subscribe if you're on YouTube. Tell one person about this if you can, especially if you can show them how to get to the website and click in. An older person, show them how to get to the website on their phone and listen to it directly. Old people don't like podcasts. That's my experience as an old person. It's that they really don't. But anyway, really appreciate any word of mouth. It's the most valuable advertising of all. And the last thing is, I'm going to be on the radio and we'll have probably a morning in studio. I'm going to give you more information when that comes up. I'm in studio every Tuesday for 30 minutes, and sometimes I stay a little longer, and if there's some calls or whatnot after a big game. But I'd like to get some calls to 105.7 from the listeners to this show to try and have a high quality call, particularly when I'm on. I'll let you know when that is, and hopefully you guys will get in a call. Anyway, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.